Thanks for listening to this Arrow FM podcast shared on accessmedia.nz with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Hi folks, this is Richard Hall here from Stonehenge Aotearoa, and this is the night sky. And just brought up a picture of the night sky, and there's that cave with me as well. Say hello, Kay.
Hello.
And also that... What's his name?
Hello there. How are you? Keith Austin.
That's Keith Austin, yeah, yeah. Is with us as well. Well, tonight's program, or today's program, is going to be mostly about the moon for some obvious reasons. there's been some special things happening with the moon lately, so that's what we're going to do. Just always like to mention that thanks to Dan Broughton, who sponsors this program. Right. So let's get on. First of all, talk about Stonehenge. You mentioned that. At the moment, we're open from Wednesday to Sunday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So just the Mondays and Tuesdays we're closed at the moment. Otherwise, we're open. Okay. And in addition to coming out and viewing Stonehenge and so on, you can, if you wish, organise a guided tour. And I'm afraid that when you do that, you end up with me. Taking you around the stone circle and telling you all the stories from antiquity and how these things work. And indeed, in fact, most people who come out to Stonehenge actually get quite amazed at the things that our ancestors learnt from these stone circles thousands and thousands of years ago. Mm. So in addition to that, the other thing that we do is Star Treks, where we take you around the night sky. And again, showing you how our ancestors used the stars, identifying the stars of the seasons and so on. For those, the guided tours and star checks do have to be booked, so you give Kay a call. Isn't that right, Kay?
Yes, you can book directly online, Richard. If you follow through, it'll take you through to the booking system.
Right. Okay. Well, there is. And, of course, the first thing I want to talk about is we've just had the harvest moon, right? Yeah. And people, we've got these names for these things. People often don't realise why this is called that and so on. So let's have a look at the harvest moon, first of all. So the moon was on or after this equinox. So you've got the autumn equinox. And then the full moon that occurs after that is the harvest moon. Right? And this goes back, you might be surprised, thousands of years in time. Because... The harvest moon was all about the time to bring in the harvest itself. All right. Now the autumn equinox occurred on March 21st, and the harvest moon on April the 2nd, which is just about 5 or 6 days ago, isn't it? Something like that. And so there's the harvest moon. Now for our ancestors, going back thousands of years, the most important event of the year was the harvest, bringing in the harvest. This is what you were going to be feeding on for months and months and months, right? And so it was very important. So everyone got together and everyone was out bringing in the harvest. And that would continue into the night, and hence the harvest moon. They would do this at the time of the harvest moon because the full moon gave enough light for the people to work right the way through the night in bringing in the harvest. And hence, that's why it's called the harvest moon. And, of course, once the harvest was all in, then there was a great party, as you can imagine. In fact, it was one of the biggest festivals of the year. Right?
I still do in some churches. You take in the fruits of the harvest, and they're blessed in the church.
Right.
Yeah. It still carries on today.
Yeah.
Very much reduced form, but it's there.
Yes, but in those days that would have been a great party going on, the Harvest Festival.
I think you'd want a party after doing all that work all night.
Yeah, another name for this Harvest Festival is Samhain, right? Which some people celebrate to this day, Samhain, a very important day, all right? So in Britain, before the 12th century, the Celtic festival of Samhain marked the beginning of the year. All right. So what would happen if you're going back to 1100s or something like that? All right, you'd wait for the harvest moon. The harvest moon would come. That marked the beginning of the year. And all these sorts of things are very important to remember because when you pick up an ancient manuscript and it says this happened on so-and-so date, so-and-so year, whose calendar they're using. Do not assume it's ours. It almost certainly is not.
Yeah, right? It's a very much a lunar-based calendar.
Yeah, well, that's right, and most of them were, yeah, based upon. We'll have a look at all those sorts of things at a later date. So that's it, Samhain. And that beautiful picture that you can see of the moon, incidentally, the moon is not a natural colour. That's the moon under total eclipse.
Yeah.
And unlike the, because the when we get a total, the moon eclipses the sun, it just completely blots out the sun. But it, this doesn't happen when we get an eclipse of the moon because the Earth's got an atmosphere. And although the normal light from the moon is completely blocked out, what happens is light from the sun gets deflected in the Earth's atmosphere and falls on the moon. But most of that light that goes through is from the red end of the spectrum.
Yes.
And so that's when we get this red moon every now and again.
It's exactly the same reason as we get orange-red sunrises and sunsets, because the sun's light is coming at a very low angle through the Earth's atmosphere.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's why you also, when you get these harvest moons, you can also get a beautiful red moon as well occurring. Yes. Okay. Now, what used to happen in the ancient world, particularly in Ireland, every fire in every household was extinguished. And then one person with a flame relit from on the sacred hill of Clachdar had this flame, and he'd run from house, and in turn somebody would run from that house to the next house and so on, right the way around the country, relighting all the fires. Right? So that was a great tradition. We should bring that back, shouldn't we, Kay?
We've got a few too many people. Poor fella be going for days.
It'll take a while.
Yes, it would do, wouldn't it? Yeah. So that's what used to happen at Samhain. Yeah.
But still, it's an amazing little ritual they had. You know, almost like bringing in the new year. The old year is done with. We're bringing in the new year. We're making a fresh start.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, we've tended to lose a lot of those old traditions, haven't we?
Mm. Yeah, I think if you were involved in it, you know, with everything gone dark and you know how much it's going to be cold if you haven't got any watch, you can't cook your food, you can't do anything, it would be pretty neat when the flame came up again, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, as I said, I just pulled up there, the festival and the new year began with the rising of the full harvest moon, all right?
Yeah.
So that's what, again, going back to what we were saying before, if you go back before the 10th century, when you say the beginning of the year, right, well, you've got to look at when the harvest festival, and it'd be at the autumn equinox, was being marked in the beginning of the year, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, now, but also interesting, at this great feast that you would have at Samhain, every household would have tons of food, but what they would do is they would put food outside. And this food was for the people that they'd lost over the year. Right. So there was a feast there for the dead as well as the living. Mm. Which is quite a nice thing, isn't it, really?
Well, I think it reminds me rather of the traditions that you find in Māoridom, where you acknowledge the people who've died before you move into the marae and things like that. Yeah. They still live on. And I think they're important because, you know, it's a little time of reflection that means a lot to the people involved.
Absolutely. Well, I brought up a picture of the moon with the ghostly figures. During the days of the Holy Roman Empire, pagan festivals were Christianized or debased, and with the exception of Easter, became a fixed calendar date. Now, I should like to mention to you something first. I talk about a pagan festival, because most people don't even know what a pagan is. Right? pagan is someone like me who lives in the countryside. So if you live in the countryside, you're a pagan. And the word pagan comes from paganus, country folk. The same as the word villain. A villain is someone who lived in a village. And why they've got these extraordinary annotations to them is that what happened was that when Christianity came along, they were able to convert the peoples in the towns, right, because they could get everyone together and convert them into Christians. But the bloody pagans and villains out there carried on worshipping the old gods and so on, right?
So yeah. Technically you are a pagan villain.
No, he's a pagan. He's in the country.
No, you've got to live in a village.
You're a villain. You're near a Masterton. But people, when we ask them to choose, you know, they shy away from pagan and say, no, they live in a village. And we say, okay, you're a villain. They're not too sure about that at all. They think they've jumped into the fire.
But I always find these things interesting, how the meanings behind words change. So when you look backwards in time, you look at a writing that has been done 2,000 years ago, does that word mean the same today?
No.
It probably doesn't.
Now, you've got that word naughty. Now, naughty used to mean a serial killer, somebody really, really bad. Now it's just a kid that's just not doing what they're told to do, you know.
That's right. So if you had a serial killer and you said in court, this is a naughty person, it wouldn't go down too well, would it?
No, but if you read an old script, you think, naughty? What have they got him in court for? Well, he was pretty bad. He was Jack the Ripper or somebody.
That's right, yeah. Okay, so that's what happened. And what happened was that the Samhain, which we know, was turned into Halloween and was held on October 31st. So that what was originally a beautiful ritual of celebrating and remembering the people we'd lost throughout the year was turned into a parody of ghosts and vampires and things like that.
It's been Americanized and commercialized.
Yeah.
And kids trying to get sweets.
Yeah, that's right. And you also got to remember, I would say October the 31st, you always got to remember that all the seasons and seasonal events
are reversed
here. So down here, when we talk about Halloween or something, we're invariably celebrating as it would have been in the Northern Hemisphere. But of course, instead of being autumn here, it's spring. You know? Yeah,
because we're ahead of you people. We're better than
absolutely.
You.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah. So there you are. So that's where Halloween comes from. And then the day following November the 1st became All Saints Day. Tell us about All Saints Day. Keith.
It's for All Saints, he's going to say.
All Saints is more of a Catholic thing than anything else.
Yeah.
But it's a day where all the saints, all the sacred people from the Bible and so forth are worshipped.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And remembered. Yep. Yeah. So they gain a day.
Originally, they'd have a saint this day and a saint that day and a saint something else day, and it got very confusing. So I don't know who it was said, let's just have one day for all the saints, and that's and I believe that's where All Saints Day
came
from.
Yeah. Patrick's still getting a good day, isn't he?
Yeah, I know. We still have Valentine and Patrick and all that sort of thing. Yeah.
It depends what the tradition is that goes with it. You see, Patrick was a fairly good drinker, obviously.
Yeah. Now, of course, the other important thing going on at the moment is that we've got people at the moon.
Four astronauts, yes.
They got their closest, just a few hours ago, at their closest point to the moon.
Right. They're going to go into radio silence about 11, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah, because they're on the back side of the moon and you can't get transmission.
Oh, okay, yeah, they would be, yeah.
They're looping around the far side of the moon. This is very similar to the Apollo 8 mission, which was almost a dress rehearsal for the Apollo 11 moon landing.
Exactly, yeah.
And they're doing exactly the same thing they did with Apollo 8. They lifted off from Earth, and I was actually watching the live broadcast on YouTube of the liftoff. Yay! It's working. It hasn't blown up on the pad. Yay! Rocket, that is. And orbited the Earth a couple of times, and then, okay, we'll go for a TLI, translunar ejection, and off we go to the moon. And now, possibly even as I speak, they're preparing to go around the far side of the moon what Kay delightfully calls the backside of the moon, because they're going round behind the moon, they're going to go into radio silence.
See,
radio waves can't travel through.
Yeah, this is something important people don't realise. A lot of people, not astronomers, don't realise. When you look at the moon in the sky, you always see the same patterns on there. And that's because the same face of the moon is pointed towards the Earth. So as it orbits around the Earth, it keeps the face, same face pointed there. Consequently, a day on the moon is a long time. And until we sent spacecraft to the other side, nobody knew what was on the other side of the moon.
On the far side of the
moon.
Exactly. The moon, technically, the moon takes exactly the same time to rotate on its axis as it does to orbit the Earth.
Mm.
And it's almost like if I were to move around you, in a circle, but keep my face aimed at you, I'll be turning at the same time that I'm orbiting. Mm. And this essentially is what the moon does. So I've seen websites saying this is the first time we've seen the far side of the moon. They're wrong, because Apollo 8, the Apollo 8
exactly.
First to see the...
And the amazing thing is that when the pictures came back, it wasn't what we expected, because it was different.
It is.
Virtually, we'll look at it later on, but there was no Maria on the other side.
There's almost no Maria at all. The big dark patches that we all see. Mm. It's just craters everywhere.
Yeah.
Yes.
You better get on, or you'll run out of time.
Yes, dear. Okay, anyway, this, as we have really been talking about, this is the first crewed mission beyond low Earth orbit since Apollo 17 in December 1972. And when I looked at it, well, you know what we're talking about? We're talking about over 50 years ago, 50, 60 years ago, that we sent someone to the moon. You know? That's how long it's actually been. So it's a 10-day mission and launched on April the 1st. We better not call it April Fool's Day. Hey. And the purpose of it is to set the stage to return humans to the surface of the moon in 2028.
Yeah.
So what they're looking to do is, once they're really just testing out all the equipment and new rockets and stuff like that, and then to land people on the moon, and then eventually to build a base on the moon.
Mm.
And so there will be permanent inhabitants of the on the surface of the moon.
Well, that's the theory behind it. If it works out, we could have permanent settlements on the moon.
Yeah.
Yes.
And in turn, that is our pathway to beyond the Earth Moon system, to the other worlds in the solar system,
Earth,
and
the
beyond.
Moon, then Mars.
Yes, that's right. So the idea of people living on Mars and that is not. It's science fiction at the moment, but one day it may not be, you know.
Yes.
For those of you watching this on TV, I've just put up this beautiful photograph. And to give you some idea of the scale of things, first of all, that's a photograph of the surface of the moon. Can you see the man on the moon?
No.
I'll bring him up. There he is there. Okay. There's the man on the moon. Yeah, and he's walking towards the lunar buggy, which is there. Okay. So that the comments made by just about every person who'd been to the moon and walked on the moon was the most awesome thing and weird thing looking at was the planet Earth.
Yeah.
And you're so far away from the Earth there, that's one of the astronauts said. He said, I used to put my thumb up and I could cover the Earth with my thumb at arm's length. And you said you looked at this little ball in the sky and you realised that every living thing you knew, every living creature, every bit of history, everything is on that little ball.
Yes.
And you realised just how little we knew about the rest of the universe.
Yes. Harrison Schmitt, who was the he was the commander of Apollo 17, which was the last moon mission we had, he actually invented a term for it, the way that you feel when you're standing, literally when you're standing on the moon looking back at the Earth, and all the political boundaries have vanished. I can't remember what his term for it was, but all those political boundaries, all those wars and battles and disagreements between one nation and another nation, or one religion and another religion, it's all invisible. It's all gone. Mm. All it is just one very fragile planet.
That's right. Yeah.
Hanging in the sky, almost like a very delicate soap bubble, and it's so easy to see how we can how we're making such a mess of that planet when we need to do something about it.
And when we look at up at the night sky, we look at those stars out there. You've got to remember that those other stars you're looking at are suns.
Yes,
and orbiting around them are worlds. Now that was just a theory once. But we now know if we've got technology good enough to begin to detect planets around other stars. We now know of thousands of stars around, planets around other stars. Now, if you look at our Milky Way galaxy, just our galaxy, there's 150,000 million stars. That's just in our galaxy.
There's a lot of them.
So just about anything you can imagine probably almost certainly does exist out there somewhere. Yeah. So this great adventure into space is just beginning. Yeah. Okay, now I've just brought up a picture of the four astronauts on the moon mission at the moment. We've got Wiseman on the right as the commander, and next to him is a lady, Christina, all right? And she is the first woman ever to go on a lunar mission.
Christina Cook.
Yeah, that's right. And next to her is Victor Glover, right? And he is the first coloured man ever to go on a mission like this, much beyond the orbit of the Earth, right? And next to him, right, is Jeremy Hansen, who is the first person who is not an American.
He's Canadian.
Yeah, so it just shows you. So there's a rather special group of people. Any comments, Kay?
No, fine. Yeah.
Do you think we should allow women?
I was listening to the live feed from the Orion capsule, and you can actually tell who was speaking. I mean, you could see them, but I was doing other things, but still listening. And you can actually tell who was speaking. You know, Hansen has got a Canadian accent. Cook, of course, you know, she's female. She's a female, so she...
got a female accent.
That's right, yes. And... And Glover has that just very slight African American accent to him. And one other thing, by the way, they've got a huge technical problem. The space toilet isn't working. I think three times the tube that vents water, shall we say, out into space, has frozen up. And they had exactly the same problem in some of the Apollo craft, by the way. And I thought they would have solved it, but three times it's frozen up and three times it's managed to fix it. Yes, but so far that is the only technical problem that they're having as they venture around the far side of the moon.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And that's something important, you know, because when we look at these things... this is not working on here. See if I can get it here. All right.
You're on the dark side of the moon, are you?
No, I had a little movie which, for some reason or other, doesn't want to work on this computer, showing you the orbit as it travels around. So it's always a problem, occur. But when you see these diagrams, you always show the Earth and Moon quite close together, and the orbit taking it round the Moon and so on. While the science, the picture you're looking at home here is the Earth and Moon, we're looking at the physical scale of the Earth and Moon, their sizes. It does not show their distances.
Yes.
I'm now going to show the distance. There they are. That's the Earth and Moon to scale, both their physical size and the distance. And as you can see, it's a huge amount of space there, isn't there?
Yes.
Between the two. So you've got to get your...
telemetry.
Navigation pretty good, haven't you, when you're going out there? Yeah.
Yes. It's like somebody said it's like duck hunting, shooting a duck with a shotgun. You have to lead ahead of the moon in order to hit the moon.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. So it's We live on the surface of the earth, and it's very difficult to comprehend these distances and that and what they mean. But this is what these people are facing now. Anyway, Artemis there has just travelled 7,600 kilometres beyond the moon, right? So it's travelled right the way around the other side.
It's further than anybody else has gone.
That's right, it is, yeah. And its greatest distance from the Earth, I've just brought it up there, is 406,841 kilometres.
Yes.
Right?
I had a friend who was asking me, why is it the furthest distance they've ever been? I mean, didn't all the other astronauts do the same thing in the Apollo era? I had to explain to him that the Moon, the distance between the Earth and the Moon changes. And the Moon is actually near its what we call apogee, which is the furthest in its orbit it is from the Earth.
So that's right.
Quite right.
The Earth's orbit, the Moon's orbit around is not a circle, it's an ellipse. But also, of course, they're travelling beyond the Moon, so you've got to add all that in as well. So, yeah. You can imagine, as you said, looking back at the Earth, thinking about what you can see there and so on. Okay. And on its return, it's going to land in the Pacific, right, on April the 11th.
Yeah, the Pacific's rather a big ocean.
I think that's why they always pick the Pacific, isn't it?
I hope they don't pick Masterton.
I mean, America has a coastline on the Pacific. I think they might be over that way.
And as it approaches the Earth, its atmospheric re-entry speed is going to be 40,000 kilometres per hour. That's 11 kilometres per second.
Yeah.
That's a lot faster than the Apollo craft when they re-entered.
Yeah. So your heat shields have got to work, haven't they?
Yes.
Yes, you get a bit worried if you lose a tile or something.
Yeah, that's right. So there's I've just pulled up our moon, beautiful picture of the moon. And the surface of the moon, because the moon's got no atmosphere, no oceans, its surface is frozen in time. So you look at a crater there, you see if you get a crater on Earth, the Earth has been hit just as many times, if not more than the moon.
Would have been hit more because it's bigger.
Bigger. But those craters just get eroded away. On the moon, they don't. They stay there forever. So if you're looking at that, those dark areas, which we call maria, and the reason why they're called seas is that's exactly what people thought they were long time ago. Look at the moon.
Great seas.
They're just volcanic plains of basalt, right?
They're kind of like flood basalts, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're just
that's right.
Flooded out.
Then you've got the other areas, mountainous areas and so on. And the younger craters you can see because they've often got that splatter around them.
Well, the only thing that's going to destroy the splatter is other craters.
That's right, yeah.
And the splatter from them covering it up.
Yeah.
But the other side, the marias are dark areas. And as I said, when you go to the other side of the moon, there's no maria. I was hoping to have some photographs of the far side of the moon taken from them before I come down, but I haven't. But we can always have a look at them later on.
Yes.
Okay.
I anticipate some spectacular photographs from the far side.
Yes.
They were taking them this morning, our time.
When they're back in radio contact with Earth, they'll radio the photographs.
Yeah, they were busy taking them.
You can see the far side of the moon.
Mm.
Yes.
That's right.
This is all a precursor, hopefully, if all goes well, to a personed moon landing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And that'll be, as we said earlier, it's a stepping stone out there. Yeah. I mean, it's just a matter of if we discover an Earth-like world around the stars of Alpha Centauri, a planet like the Earth, where will people want to go there? You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's what's laying in the future of us. Anyway, our time is just about up. Just to remind you that Stonehenge, if you want to come out and visit us, is open Wednesday through to Sunday and from 10 a.m. to 4.
Yeah, there is a special program coming up, which is specifically for locals, really, but anybody can join in. We'll let the other people join in. It's basically a Star Trek reduced down a bit and at the price that ordinary people, you know, out of your ordinary pocket you can afford, because adults are 20 and high school are 10 and primary school are free from primary and below. So you can come for a shortened one, which will be less than an hour, and enjoy the night sky. It's in support of the Dark Sky Association in Wairarapa.
Okay, folks. We will catch up with you in the very near future.